is Nightline.
Tonight, it's Beyonce country.
This ain't Texas. Ain't no holdin'.
Her Cowboy Carter album, released only moments ago, featuring songs like Texas Hold'em, poised to gallop up the charts. But is country ready for Beyonce?
Just because you sing hip-hop music with a country accent does not make it country music.
The top Grammy winner of all time, trailblazing for others.
I've been knocking, banging, kicking on this door, and Beyonce really opened it.
And what we now know, the legends Beyonce invited to help her make music history.
Jolene, Jolene.
Including Dolly's signature smash, Jolene. Plus, Ewan McGregor.
I don't mind flying. What you're doing is suicide.
The Star Wars star now playing a Russian count in A Gentleman in Moscow.
Why did you come back only a year after the revolution?
I miss the climate.
Why he thinks the story is more important than ever.
We started before Putin invaded Ukraine to suddenly took on a very new resonance.
Now you're in the world.
And for all the fans who couldn't get enough of him belting it out.
Do you think you'll sing again since Moulin Rouge?
Nightline.
Good evening and thanks so much for joining us. I'm Phil Lipoff. Tonight, it is official. Beyonce has released a country album. Cowboy Carter dropped just moments ago, but as you know, it's been making headlines now for weeks. The superstar blazing a trail for other black female artists to follow and shining a light on the rich history of those in the genre before her. Here's ABC's Janae Norman.
With Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages.
16 Carriages.
Beyonce's renaissance into a country music star is only just beginning. But like anything she does, people can't stop talking about it.
Beyonce's conquering country.
The Houston native's upcoming country album, Renaissance Act 2.
Queen Bee is embracing her Texas roots.
Here in the heart of Houston is the rodeo.
Beyonce has performed here multiple times, so we wanted to ask Houstonians how they feel about their hometown queen, Beyonce.
My family loves Beyonce. She's from Houston, so we love that.
What is it about Beyonce's new music that makes it country?
I think the topic of her lyrics, it's very country-centered.
You know, country music's for everybody. It's for Beyonce.
But is country music ready for Beyonce?
It's got too much of a pop twang to it.
Just because you sing hip-hop music with a country accent does not make it country music.
Michael Jordan, was he known as a basketball player or a baseball player? Enough said.
On social media, an uproar ensued when a fan posted that an Oklahoma country radio station initially refused to play Beyonce's new music. In a statement, the minority-owned station, KYKC, said that at the time, they, quote, had zero knowledge that Beyonce was going to release a country song and added, we highly respect Beyonce and her talent. On cable news, former Dukes of Hazzard star John Schneider sang this.
They've got to make their mark just like a dog in a dog walk park.
In a statement, a representative for Schneider said John was clearly talking about artists attempting to cross over into country music and not specifically about Beyonce.
I look at the reaction to Beyonce, I hope I can speak frank here, but it's a musical equivalent of Shut Up and Dribble.
All of this forcing a reflection on the sometimes fraught history of race and country music.
People like to ask the question, why is country music so white? And I point to the larger issue that America is segregated and country music has braided its identity into American identity.
I've been knocking, banging, kicking on this door and Beyonce really opened it.
The problem is the way that the industry is reacting to her is not the way that they have reacted to any black woman in the past. And I don't think it'll be the way that they react to other black women in the future.
Before the album Cowboy Carter even dropped, Beyonce made history, becoming the first black woman with the number one song on the country charts with Texas Hold'em.
That's incredible because this is a place where Lil Nas X's Old Town Road wasn't allowed to be considered on the country charts. This is a place where Morgan Wallen was caught on tape saying racial slurs, and the response to that was to give him one of the biggest albums in country music of all time. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
In a post on Instagram, Beyonce writing, "My hope is that years from now, the mention of an artist's race as it relates to releasing genres of music will be irrelevant." She added that the album was born out of an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed.
I think Texas Hold'em and 16 Carriages exist as a pinnacle moment for country music because they point back to an extraordinary Black country past. So it is pointing back to an entire history of Black musicality and Black presence.
This ain't Texas.
Videos going viral of people dancing to Queen Bee. Beyonce even shouting out the real-life boogie on her TikTok. From older couples like this one to younger ones, all garnering millions of views each.
It takes somebody who is at superstar status to do something that shakes it all up.
That shakeup thanks in part to country and folk artist Rhiannon Giddens. Her banjo is the first thing you hear on Texas Hold'em.
I know for a long time you said, once Beyonce puts a banjo on a track, my job is done. Obviously, you don't feel like your job is done.
Yes, never done.
Do you feel like this isn't about Beyonce going country, it's Beyonce getting back to her roots?
I'm like, people can do what they want to do. They want to make a country record. Make a country record. Like, nobody's asking Lana Del Rey, what right do you have to make a country record? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody has the opportunity to explore their roots, to go back and go like, this is my life too, I wanna do this. Like, the stay in your lane, well, that's not real country, that's just racism. You know, people don't wanna say it's because she's Black, you know, but they use these coded terms, you know? And that's problematic. So this is from Jamaica in the late 1600s, one of the earliest notated pieces of music known to be collected by Africans in the Caribbean.
She's got a Pulitzer Prize, a couple Grammys, but the instrument she made famous, the banjo, wasn't always something she felt comfortable around growing up in North Carolina.
I got exposed to the banjo, you know, like as a child, as everyone, you know, I would have seen the Beverly Hillbillies. I still felt like, as a person of color, that I had to kind of like ask for permission to go into this, what I had been told was this sort of unassailable, white, Appalachian, you know, like mountain tradition. That was a kind of a monolithic tradition.
But that tradition changed once she learned the roots of those strings.
Finding out that the banjo was an African-derived instrument invented by people in the Caribbean, African diaspora, enslaved people, blew my mind. And I was like, it lit this fire in me. And I was kind of like, can I come into this music? I really like it, you know? And then I learned the history and I was like, give it to me. You know, I was like, this is mine too. This is everybody.
We caught up with Giddens before her sold out show at the Beacon Theater in New York City. The Renaissance woman following her North Star.
To now be a part of this moment on Beyonce's country hit. What is that like for you?
Like, to be honest, it's like, it's the best thing ever. I think about the legacy of the Black string band player, the Black banjoist, the Black fiddler that helped create the pathways and the byways of American culture. To be represented in that way is just amazing.
Strumming strings full of history to help a new generation discover their roots. That responsibility, precious and poignant for Rhiannon.
Like when they're dancing to the banjo, I'm sorry, it's just like, I'm sorry. I've just been working so hard. It's like, it's our music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just had to have patience. This music is a part of us. And it's been missing from our understanding of who we are. And I think it leaves a huge hole. You know what I mean? And so to see, you know, black people doing line dances to my banjo, there's an opportunity for people who don't know who I am to have a piece in that. And then if they want more, there's a bunch of people doing this work.
Our thanks to Janae. And for more on Beyoncé's return to her roots, stream Impact by Nightlines, It's Beyoncé Country, now on Hulu. When we come back, the big names Beyoncé invited into the Cowboy Carter Hive, including Dolly Parton on Beyoncé's version of her song, Jolene. Plus, Obi-Wan Kenobi himself joins Nightline co-anchor Juju Chang. What Ewan McGregor says about meeting Star Wars fans in real life.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Well, from his Emmy Award-winning performance in Netflix's Halston,
I'm too big for that room,
to A Galaxy Far, Far Away with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I don't think so.
Our next guest is no stranger to unique roles. Actor Ewan McGregor is here to discuss his latest, taking us back to 1920s Russia. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Well, I've decided in our audience there are Obi-Wan Star Wars fans, there are Moulin Rouge fans, there are Fargo fans,
yeah,
who just enjoy your career so much.
Oh.
Tell us what draws you to all of these different types of genres and different characters.
Yeah. Well, it's just luck. I'm lucky enough to be able to choose things that grab me, you know? And I've been lucky enough in my career to work in all different kinds of mediums, on the stage and front television and movies and all different kinds of sizes of movies, if you like. And I like it that way. I like being drawn by good stories and good characters, and I leave it at that. It's quite simple, my choice, really.
And this story, this character, is a gentleman in Moscow. It seems both cerebral and whimsical at the same time, and it's based on a novel by Amor Towles,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
And you play Count Alexander Rostov. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that character and kind of what drew you to
him. Well, what drew me was Amor's novel, ultimately. I mean, I was approached, I must have read an early draft of maybe episode 1 and 2. It's an 8-part series. And then I was totally in. I knew that I wanted to be part of the story. And then I had the pleasure of reading Amor's book, but knowing that I was going to play the Count. And it really is the most phenomenal novel. And it's a wonderful book to read. And I never wanted it to end, you know, from halfway through I started reading it very slowly, just because I didn't want it to finish.
Yeah, well, let's take a look at the Count in action.
Okay.
You left Russia for Paris in the spring of 1914.
Yes, I remember apple blossom in the trees.
More likelihood it was spring, yes.
What concerns us here is your return in 1918. Why did you come back only a year after the revolution? You must have understood the reception a man of your nobility would receive.
I miss the climate.
There's a great quote that you have in the first episode. They can take away everything from you, but they can't take who you are.
Yeah.
Tell us about the themes that you try to explore.
Yeah, the Count's has lost everything. We learned through the piece that he has a great loss in his past, which is the death of his sister, that he's involved in. He's lost his entire way of life. Like, he's a aristocrat, he's a count, and in the Russian Revolution of 1917, that was finished, you know, and most of the people he knew and loved would have been either executed or sent into exile. So he's living in a very new, different, strange world that he doesn't believe in. We started before Putin invaded Ukraine, but once that happened, while we were working on this project, it suddenly took on a very new resonance. And the backdrop of the story is the start of what Russia is today. You know, it's the sort of kernels of what led us to where we are today. So it's quite interesting.
And also in the show, you have a bond with a young star, Alexa Goodall, mm-hmm. and you get to play across all these incredible sets and backdrops. Yeah. How much fun that must have been.
And me and Alexa got to play these, you know, she befriends or they befriend each other, but she sort of meets the Count. So she's also sort of knocking around this hotel on her own. And she shows the Count all these secret passageways and secret rooms and forgotten parts of the hotel that sort of expand his existence in a way.
And your on-screen wife is played by your real-life wife,
yes.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I always think behavior is a matter of handling.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
We met working together. We were in Fargo season 3, and we immediately had a sort of instinctive way of working with each other.
I made reference to the fact that Train Spotting is such a momentous moment in your career.
Yeah.
1996. It was the same year your daughter Clara was born. You're known as such a family man. What's it like watching them make a mark in the world?
Yeah, amazing. At the moment, it's incredible. Yeah, I made a movie with my daughter Clara called Bleeding Love, which is just about to be released. And to actually get a chance to act with her in a film that she helped write and that she produced and made happen was just an amazing thing. Yeah, really amazing.
And yet your fans are so diehard Star Wars fans as well. What's it like encountering Obi-Wan Kenobi fans throughout the world?
I love meeting the real fans. It means a great deal to them in their lives. And I've met a lot of people that have moved me with their stories about how it's helped them in their life, these films. So it's true escapism, isn't it, Star Wars? So it's lovely to meet them. Yeah.
Moving forward for you, what's next for Ewan McGregor? I mean, what do you look for in your next projects?
I'm more of the same, I hope. I'm just about to work with Anne Hathaway on a movie, and I'm looking forward to that very much.
Do you think you'll sing again since Moulin Rouge?
Yes, I hope so. Yeah, I really, really do. Yeah, I'd love to. It's been a while since I sang on stage, which I've done, and in a movie. So I'm hoping that can happen again soon. We'll see.
And yet we're here to talk about A Gentleman in Moscow. Yeah. Why should somebody sit down and watch this Eats part series?
I think it's the most beautiful story. It's old-fashioned in terms of its drama. It's really about the human being, the human heart and the human soul. And the drama is large in it, but it is about family and love and friendship and set against this really interesting backdrop of history. So I think it's really, it really draws you in, I think.
Well, thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
You very
it was
much.
Really a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
Great.
And the new limited series, A Gentleman in Moscow, begins streaming March 29th on Paramount Plus.
Our thanks to Juju. And when we return, it won't quite take 16 carriages to carry them all, but country fans will recognize a few very big names lending their chops to Beyoncé's brand new album.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his 3rd bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And finally tonight, the Beehive is buzzing with who's on Act 2, Cowboy Carter. Beyoncé including a cover of her classic Jolene, as well as an appearance by Dolly Parton herself. Also on the album, Dolly's goddaughter, Miley Cyrus. Only minutes old now, Cowboy Carter also paying homage to the genre's first commercially successful black female artist, Linda Martell, and one of the oldest living country legends, Willie Nelson. Can't wait to listen. That's Nightline. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.